Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the Bulls Talk podcast for Monday, May 22nd. Our good friend and colleague, Mark Schnauss, is on vacation this week, so I'm Kevin
well
Anderson
deserved.
Filling in. We've got our Bulls insider, Vincent Goodwill, our 15-year NBA vet, and our Bulls analyst, Kendall Gill, and SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell. You can find him at Twitter, at SBN Ricky. Guys, let's first talk about the big picture surrounding the Bulls right now, and that's certainly coming up on draft night. Since we last had our podcast, the Celtics won the lottery. They will select number one overall. A lot of people expect them to go Markelle Fultz and keep that pick. But, Ricky, I want to start with you. Assuming the Celtics lose now in five, does that give them more of a motivation to go, listen, Fultz on this team, we're not beating LeBron. We need to get a better elite wing perimeter guy like Jimmy who could score and play defense. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I know they won game three, but to me, this series should give them less motivation to trade for Jimmy to me because it just shows the gulf between where they're at and where Cleveland's at. And certainly where Golden State's at in the other conference, I think that Boston's best bet at this point is to play the long game, to sort of wait out LeBron's prime, wait out this Warriors core being together. And the first piece of that is to get Markelle Fultz. I saw Markelle Fultz as a recruit a few times, and every time I saw him, he was just improved leaps and bounds. I think that he was someone who was totally off the radar early in his high school career, rose up to a four-star, and then eventually blossomed into one of the best players in the class. We saw it at Washington last year, averaged over 23 points per game. To me, he's everything you want out of a point guard. I compare him to like a bigger Kyrie Irving, someone who could create his own offense off the dribble, someone who's an acrobat at the rim, but he's also just so much bigger than Irving. It's 6'5 with a 6'10 wingspan. He can impact the game defensively a lot more. So I think Fultz is a fantastic prospect. I think that he would be in contention to go number one in almost any draft. He's the best point guard prospect probably the NBA has seen since John Wall in 2010, I would say. So to me, I'm drafting Markelle Fultz. I'm playing the long game, and they have that 2018 pick that belongs to the Nets next year, too, that they could possibly add another franchise centerpiece with.
Vincent, would the Bulls do a trade if it didn't include number one overall?
They shouldn't do a trade if it includes number one. You can't allow a team like the Celtics, who have strategically placed themselves in a position to be in a position of strength, where they made a great trade all those years ago, for all of those draft picks. All those draft picks are basically going to come home to roost in the next 2 years. If you're the Bulls and you don't get the best assets, whoever's best asset for Jimmy Butler, if you're going to trade him, then what's the point of doing the deal? Like, literally, there is no point in putting the top 15 player. I know Kendall may think top 25 or whatever, but a top 15 player in the league, if you name anybody who made one of those NBA teams and you put them on the market, you are getting the best prospects. You are getting their best young player, their best draft pick. They're probably the best two players in the draft pick. So if you're the Bulls, you can't settle for anything less.
Kendall, would I think Ricky's right about there being a huge divide between where Cleveland is and where Boston is right now. Let's say hypothetically they would have done a trade deadline deal for the Nets pick, which turned out to be number one overall, and Jimmy's on the Celtics right now. Mm-hmm. Does that give the Celtics a chance at all?
I still don't think it gives them a chance. You know, as great as a player as Jimmy has turned himself into, I still don't think that even with Jimmy Butler, they could beat the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. I think LeBron, even though despite him having a subpar game last night, he's still head and shoulders above everybody else in this league. And I also agree that the Celtics have to play the long game. You know, they have a lot of talent. They get the number one pick. They draft Fultz. I think you just got to wait LeBron out. Wait for him to get old. Just like, Canelo Alvarez is doing to Triple G. You know, you wait him out. You let them get a little bit old.
It may be 10 years, though.
Yeah. No. They're fighting in September, but let them get
old. No, I mean for LeBron.
Oh, for LeBron? Yeah. No. I think LeBron can play at this level for another 2 or 3 years.
See, this is my problem. This is my problem with the league. You're looking at LeBron like the guy you can't beat. So you get all these scared GMs who don't want to go for it. Look, you never know what can happen. And there are a lot of great players who would like to have a decent squad to say, you know what, I want to go against LeBron. Now, let's say they probably won't win, but if you're talking about the reason we don't have compelling theater in this year's playoffs, is because you got a bunch of scared GMs, scared front offices, scared coaches who don't want to make moves in the name of competition and saying, you know what, let's go for it. I'll say this, Toronto, I was not a big fan of them. But at least they went after a guy like Serge Ibaka, and they said, you know, we took Cleveland to six last year. Maybe we can catch him this year. It didn't help them, but at least they can say, you know what, we got Lowry as a free agent, Ibaka's a free agent. We've gone for it in the interim as opposed to everybody just saying, you know what, we're just going to cede the conference to LeBron. If you want to talk about a difference between Kendall's era, you know, back then and now, is that they weren't ceding anything to Michael Jordan. They weren't giving him that. The Pat Rileys, the Van Gundys, right. Those guys went after him. Those front office went after him. These guys now, I don't like it.
Well, isn't that an argument to trade for Jimmy then?
It's not an argument to trade for Jimmy, because that can't be the only move that you make. Like, it's not that Jimmy's not a good enough player. It's that Jimmy's not enough. So, okay, do you give Isaiah Thomas $200 million? And if you got a problem with giving Isaiah Thomas $200 million, chances are you're going to have a problem giving Jimmy Butler $200 million, because he'll be 34 at the end of the life of that contract, maybe with a beat-up body with the way that he plays the game. So it's not just Jimmy Butler or Gordon Hayward or Paul George. It's one of those guys plus more. It's not a one-player situation. To me, it's a multiple player situation where you go get multiple guys and then you say, LeBron, let's go get it.
And that being said, the Boston Celtics have enough money under the salary cap to get a Hayward this summer. Mm-hmm. Okay. And also
they don't have to trade for Jimmy
and get keep a Fultz, who's 6'5", 6'10" wingspan, just like he said before, who might be a real stud in this league, you know. And then you take him as a point guard. You can sort of let Isaiah Thomas go, you know,
or trade him for a return,
you know, and let this kid run your franchise in the future.
Well, the point you just made is a really good one, because a lot of NBA fans think trades are made in a vacuum where it's one player for one player, or just that deal itself. And it's not, because if the Celtics hypothetically would trade for Jimmy, they would have to probably absorb Jimmy into their cap space, which they will have a ton of this summer, but it would certainly take them out of the running to get Gordon Hayward by bringing on Jimmy. Even if you sent a couple contracts in return, you're probably not going to have a max slot to add Jimmy in a trade and add Gordon via free agency. Right. And so, Ricky, I want to get your take. In terms of this Celtics team right now, let's say next year, a year older for LeBron, and then let's say this Cavs team remains relatively intact. Does adding Fultz with the first pick and adding Gordon Hayward in free agency, is that enough to kind of even the balance a little bit?
I mean, to me, the Cavs would still likely be the heavy favorite in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I think, you know, for Celtics fans, it would just be an incredible position to be in, because next year they could have the number one pick again, owning Brooklyn's pick outright. Brooklyn couldn't prove this offseason. They were the worst team in the league this year. So I think that, you know, certainly the Nets are going to be, again, one of the worst teams next year. Yeah. I think Fultz will be able to contribute right away, in the sense that he'll be like a microwave scorer for them off the bench. I think he'll be able to play with Avery Bradley. He'll be able to play a bit with Isaiah Thomas. That would give him a lot of scoring on the floor next season. So to me, even if they get Hayward and they add Fultz, Boston's still going to be a bit a ways. But, I mean, you just look at what Golden State has. To me, if you're talking about being gun-shy about competition, it's almost more about Golden State than it is about LeBron, because the Cavs had some trouble this year. They didn't get the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, they flipped the switch 100% in the postseason. But, I mean, you look at Golden State, they got two of the three best players in the league. Draymond and Klay, I would say, are probably top 15 overall players. That's just an absurd collection of talent. And though they haven't totally clicked this season, they still won 67 games. It's just going to be impossible for anyone else to really compete with them. So if I'm the Celtics, I would play the long game. I would take Fultz this year. I would start scouting Mo Bamba and DeAndre Ayton in that 2018 draft, and hopefully by the time Golden State's breaking apart, by the time LeBron, you know, finally starts to decline, if that ever happens, he's still only 32 years old. I think he's got some time left. But then you would think Boston's probably going to be the cream of the crop in the East.
Circling back to Jimmy, I saw a tweet last week from Jordan Schultz. He said he asked three NBA front office guys their biggest surprise regarding the all-NBA teams. All three said Jimmy Butler and agreed he is not a top 15 guy. I read that and I'm thinking, for three front office people to say that, it's either one, someone trying to devalue Jimmy so they can trade for him, two, somebody maybe in the Kings front office has no idea about the value of anybody in the league, or three, is it's maybe Gar just trying to subvert his own guy. Vincent, first off, your reaction to that tweet, and come on, you can't, do you really believe that Jimmy's not a top 15 guy, and that front office personnel around the league believe that too?
Well, I think it's, we have something called confirmation bias. And a lot of these GMs and whoever, look, three front office people, and there's like hundreds of them in the league. Mm-hmm. Like, you just pick three. Yeah. You might pick another three and they say he's a top 10 player, you know, and he may not actually fall into either one of those categories. But a lot of these people passed him up. And sometimes, unfortunately, we are stuck with our first impressions of what we think a player is, or what we think a player's ceiling is. Like, they may think that, well, Jimmy's the best player on the team that only won 41 games and that couldn't get out of the first round of the playoffs, as opposed to saying, you know what, that team literally had nothing around him type of thing. And plus, when you don't know a guy, it's a lot easier to say that. And as another point, and Ricky, both of you guys can say this, this league is top heavy. You know, you can name a guy like Isaiah Thomas, and I wouldn't say he's a top 15 player in the league, mm-hmm. on both ends of the floor.
Right.
You may find someone who does, because there's a guy who can be top 10 in one guy's list and top 25 in another guy's list. There's just a lot of great
players.
It's
really subjective. It is.
It's very subjective.
I think 1 through 7, everybody's got those same guys. I
mean,
those are the, quote, superstars in the league. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Once you get in that lower 10 range and then through 10 to 20, there is a mix up there.
And listen, I think that here's the reason why I think that they don't consider Jimmy as a top 15 guy. I think that he's a top 15 guy simply because he can play both ends of the court, okay? And a lot of people kind of dismiss that, but that's a skill in and of itself. Jimmy last year didn't make the playoffs. This year struggled to make the playoffs and didn't get out of the first round. Had he made the playoffs last year, got out of the first round this year, then they would probably think of him as more of a top 15 player, you know, because it all comes down to whether you win or lose. You know, that's how really players are judged. And, you know, Jimmy has top 15 talent, of course, but he's got to win. And that's the reason why these GMs think of him in that way.
Ricky, do you think that's what it is, or is it GMs or front office personnel not valuing defense as much as they should?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both of those things. I mean, to me, Jimmy Butler was a no-brainer making All-NBA this year. I thought he was for sure a better player than Paul George. I would think looking at something like DeMar DeRozan making the team over Chris Paul, that's a lot more questionable than Jimmy Butler making the team. Jimmy Butler was a no-brainer selection for the All-NBA team. And, you know, I just think, unfortunately for Jimmy, he's kind of wasted his best years here the last couple of years. Yeah. Playing for a front office that hasn't done him a lot of favors. I mean, they haven't really put him in a great position to succeed. You hope maybe that changes next year, but of course, Dwayne Wade holds all the cards with that big player option that he's certainly appears like he's going to exercise that, be back on the team next year. At that point, Jimmy will only have one more season on this team-friendly deal for the Bulls, so, you know, it's easy to point the finger at the best player when he's not, you know, leading them deep into the playoffs, but at the same time, it's a team game, and I feel like management has not done Jimmy many favors.
And I'll say this, too. Jimmy doesn't have an aesthetically pleasing game. Like, mm-hmm. he's not a guy that you're going to pop in a tape and you're going to say, we're going to watch Jimmy Butler work on this guy from 15 feet out or 20 feet out, wiggle, do all the pretty stuff. Right. Like, he works himself into great games. Like, when you see him take the 50-point games that he had out of it, the regular Jimmy Butler 24, 25-point game, it's not something that's pretty. You know what I'm saying? He works himself into it. He gets himself to the free throw line. He's a physical guy. He doesn't have a whole lot of wiggle to his game. So, guys, when you evaluate the game, sometimes you can't figure out exactly how he manages to score 24, 25 points at the end of the game, because it's not like he has the go-to move, the signature play that sort of stands out like, you know, Anthony Davis is from 15 feet, DeMarcus Cousins drop step, insert player, you know what I'm saying, all these other different things that guys go to and lean on. Jimmy doesn't have that. He just manages to work himself into a 25 or 30 point game, and you really don't know how.
A lot of it's from the free throw line.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy, unlike, you know, James Harden gets the free throw line at an excessive rate like Jimmy does, but Jimmy doesn't have that three ball to rely on. You know, he's not going out there and he's not shooting up six or seven threes a game and raining it down. And I think that maybe is a detriment. I think you're right.
And he's also not Broadway. He's off Broadway, okay? Because he didn't come from a glamour school. Mm-hmm. He wasn't publicized. He was a late first round draft pick and had to work himself all the way up to this level. And sometimes that's not respected. You know, all the hard work you put into
guys look at pedigree. People look at pedigree and where you came from.
Yeah, pedigree. That's what it is.
And I'll say this. As good as Jimmy Butler was in 14, 15, I was like, he can't get any better. Right. As good as Jimmy Butler was last year, he can't get any better. Yeah. As good as he is this year, I don't want to be the person caught, you know, saying, well, Jimmy Butler can't get any better because I've been wrong twice. I think people can't see any more progression in his game to say, okay, he's a top 15 player. Yeah. You look at a guy who has completely, basically, maxed out. But the problem is if he maxes out and he's on a better team, I think he's looked at as a better player.
Right.
You know, Jimmy, it's no secret. He works as hard as anybody in the league, putting his time in the gym, working on his game. I mean, he's gone from a late first-round pick to being a perennial all-star. I mean, that's to do that, it takes a lot more than just pure talent.
It does.
It takes work ethic.
Watch the future of the White Sox as CSN will televise 8 Charlotte night games this May and June. Get your first look at Yoan Moncada, Reynaldo Lopez, Carson Fulmer, and more. Visit csnchicago.com/charlottenights for the complete schedule.
Let's go to the Celtics-Cavs series, specifically to the Game 3 loss by the Cavs. And LeBron's, I don't want to call it a meltdown because he didn't melt down, but LeBron did not play very well at all in the last quarter and a half of that game. And that big 21-point lead they had evaporated. And it was a large part to how the Celtics were shooting the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, give credit to Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley, how they played down the stretch. But LeBron did not play well at all. He was awful. But everyone wants to take that. The conversation on Twitter, on basketball Twitter last night, wasn't how great the Celtics were and how much effort they had when they were a historical underdog in that game. It was, oh, you never saw Michael play in a game like that. Is it fair to compare Michael to LeBron? Kendall, I'll start with you in terms of that conversation.
It's fair because he's being mentioned in the same breath as Michael. You know, it's absolutely fair. You know, I saw last night where the game was, I believe it was the Boston Celtics were up 2. LeBron had the basketball. He dribbled, drove to the lane. Where's Kyrie? Threw the ball out to Kyrie. Michael Jordan's not doing that. Michael Jordan's taking that last shot. And I know LeBron has hit a ton of big shots in his career, but he still has that habit of looking for somebody else to win the game for him. And that's where I think that Michael separates himself from LeBron.
Now, is that completely fair? Because Kerr and Paxson hit big shots late in games for the Bulls, where Michael certainly passed it in those situations.
But only when Michael was double-teaming. And his last resort was passing the basketball.
Well, that's the problem. That's the bigger problem that we have now, is that we've created the Michael Jordan mythology, for one. You know, because there wasn't social media back then.
No, it wasn't.
And we can look at everything in the vacuum, in the NBA Chicago Bulls package, the vacuum of this perfect stair-step player where went through the process, and once he got to the top, he didn't come down, basically for almost a decade, short of, you know, shagging some curveballs and all that in center field. But you can't judge every player based off the Michael Jordan corollary. Like, LeBron James is a 27-point-a-game scorer, but he's not a scorer. Like, that's not – he scores because he's gifted and talented. Mm-hmm. He's not a scorer because he's Kobe Bryant just going to, you know, going to find a shot anywhere on the floor. Like, the beauty of his game is that he's more magic than Michael. And all of a sudden – and when you celebrate that and then all of a sudden he doesn't take the last shot or whatever, then it becomes a point of criticism. And I don't think that we should judge – if Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time – That should not be the standard to which every great player is judged against, because great players usually break their own molds. They usually create their own legacies. And the other problem I have is this, and this is Chicago Twitter, this is Bulls Twitter, this is NBA Twitter. Michael Jordan had bad games too, all right? He had terrible games. A lot of them were against the Detroit Pistons, all right? He had bad games against the...
Oh, my God, here we go.
No, I'm just saying. He had bad games against the Knicks. He had bad games against the Heat. He had a subpar Michael Jordan NBA Finals series against the Seattle Supersonics in 1996. Go look at the numbers. He was, out of all six final series, that one was by far the worst. But the thing
and
is,
the Bulls were up 3-0 in that series, weren't they?
Yep. Because they were better than Seattle.
Right.
So my problem is, I have no problem with the overall comparison, but the micro, like after every game, we have to say, well, Michael didn't do this, or Michael didn't do that. Or even on the other end, if LeBron scores 40, well, Michael never scored 40 with 15 and 8. No, we don't have to. We can evaluate after a playoff series, after the finals. We can evaluate it then, but this every night, every quarter thing, it is exhausting.
Isn't that the society we live in right now, Ricky?
Unfortunately.
Where everything's instant analysis and has to be placed in its scheme of history and where we are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, at the local level, we saw it with the Bears the last few years with Jay Cutler, where it was like every throw was a referendum on whether or not Jay Cutler was a good quarterback. With LeBron, it's the same thing on a national or even international level. I personally think we're going to be talking about LeBron versus Jordan for the rest of our lives. As long as we live, people are going to be debating that. You know, you look already, even before these finals, LeBron is probably one of the five best players ever, maybe even number two, number three up there with, you know, Kareem, Magic, those guys. So LeBron's put himself in this position by the fact that he's been incredibly productive for so long. His teams continue to win. This is going to be, what, his sixth or seventh straight finals. Mm-hmm. I think it's a legit comparison between him and Jordan. It just gets nauseating after a while. And my advice for that, the best thing you can do, just don't go on Twitter. You don't need to look at it. No one's making you look at it. And LeBron's put himself in that position. So it's something we're going to be talking about for a while, but that's just how it works in today's world, I guess.
Well, if Twitter goes premium, like I was reading today, they are considering that may solve the problem right there. But the thing is, it's not just basketball Twitter. It's not just Chicago Bulls Twitter. It's also Chicago fans, because I'm watching the game with my wife last night, who's a from Chicago, diehard basketball fan. Game ends, the first thing she says to me, Michael would not have lost that game.
Did Michael ever lose a game? Like, no. I don't remember Michael Jordan ever losing a game ever. He went 82-0.
15-0,
every season, 15-0. Yeah. Like, can a player just have a bad game without being a referendum on his entire existence? Like, can we just have that? Can we just say LeBron had a bad game? We can't just say, oh, he was fatigued or disengaged. No.
Yeah,
he had a bad game. Yeah, let's just call it what it is. Yeah, he's human. He had a bad game, and not frame it into some, well, he's not Michael. Well, who is?
No one is.
Yeah, that's fair, because we all have bad games, you know, and LeBron has been playing lights out.
Since game four of the finals last year, he has had a bad playoff game in 15 games.
Yes.
There's a reason they had that win streak, too. Moving on to the Bulls draft in June, there are two names that are getting consistently mentioned where they're picking a 16. One is Duke's Luke Kennard, and the other one's Adelaide's Terrence Ferguson, who played in Australia but is from the U.S., Ricky, you've written recently how you believe Terrence Ferguson would be a very good fit for the Bulls. Why is that?
Yeah, I guess I think Ferguson would be good if some of the other guys are gone. I personally would like Donovan Mitchell from Louisville, especially if you want to talk about the idea of, like, Jimmy as the lead ball handler. That might be the Bulls' most pragmatic solution, point guard, I think. I know the front office doesn't exactly agree with that, but if Jimmy were to have the ball in his hands, you would want someone who could defend other point guards, someone who could raise the team's floor athletically, and Donovan Mitchell's a freak. He's got a 6'10 wingspan. He's only 6'3", but I think he could defend opposite point guards. He's super athletic, and I think that, you know, if he's available, he would really help the Bulls. Unfortunately, he's been rising up draft boards lately. Before the combine, he was in the 20s for most mock drafts. Now he's a lottery pick, so if he's not available, I think Ferguson would be interesting. I saw him play a few times on the recruiting trail, and he passes the eye test very easily. He's got great size for a shooting guard at 6'6". He shoots the hell out of the ball. He made 6 three-pointers at the Nike Hoop Summit last year in 2016. That set the record. And he's also someone with the athleticism capable of winning a dunk contest. Now, to me, he reminds me a little bit of Terrence Ross, who was traded from the Raptors to the Magic last year. I was a big Terrence Ross fan when he was drafted back in 2012 or 2013. He's had a pretty good career. He had a 50-point game in Toronto. But for whatever reason, it just hasn't totally clicked for Terrence Ross. I kind of think the same thing about Terrence Ferguson. It's easy to see the talent, but I don't want to project him as like a future all-star or anything like that because, you know, despite all those obvious physical tools, there's a mental component to the game. There's, you know, the defensive end of the floor where you really have to commit yourself. There's just reading the floor and moving the ball and making the right play. So I think that, you know, there is a lot to like about Ferguson, but I don't know if he'd be a home run pick for the Bulls in that situation, but, you know, you just look at his gifts and he would be something who would help, someone who would help a lot of their problem areas.
It's hard to get a home run pick at 16. I mean, they're there. The Bulls certainly got Jimmy and Taj Gibson in the back of the first round and had home run picks there. My concern with Luke Kennard, another guy he's mentioned, is that he reminds me of Doug McDermott in the sense of great three-point shooter, great scorer in college, but a poor defensive player. And Kennard, the two knocks on his game is he's got short arm length. You know, most basketball players, you like to have your arm length well above your height. His is just below his height, and he's got poor lateral quickness. And so I would personally be a little gun shy of taking somebody they just unloaded to Oklahoma City because they felt like he wasn't a good fit defensively or for this roster. Kendall, is that, should they go a more established program? Because one of the reasons they got criticism for taking a guy from Creighton was it wasn't a big-time program, and maybe that kind of the flaws in his game didn't show up as well. Kennard went to Duke, though.
Yeah, he went to Duke. However, I'm in agreement with Ricky. Terrence Ferguson is the guy who I would pick. One, look at the Bulls' weaknesses this year. Shooting, okay? The guy can knock down three-point shots. He's 6'6". He's an athlete. That's something that the Bulls missed this year. Also, I think that can transfer to the defensive end as well. You know, defense is taught, you know, and when you teach it the right way, it can be learned quickly, okay? And that's something that the Bulls need. They need somebody that has the length, that has the athleticism, that can shut down somebody like an Isaiah Thomas, that can really move their feet. And that's why I'm in favor of that pick at 16.
I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say I'm agreeing with Kendall. Yeah, I mean, I look at it like this. I've seen some film on Terrence Ferguson. I've talked to people close to him. Yeah. And what he's working on now, to me, is, you know, the mid-range, a mid-range game. He's wiry, so he knows he's not going to necessarily be able just to get his shot immediately. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's played professionally, now it's not NBA. But when you go overseas and you take that chance, you know, and you go and play over there and you play with grown men, I think you have a little bit, a slight advantage over just the regular college guy.
Right.
And like you said, my thing with the Bulls is this. You're at the point now where if you're going to talk about skill development, remember Gar and Pax, they were talking about skill development or player development sort of tacitly blame the coaching staff. If you're going to say that, you're going to put the onus on the coaching staff, then you better go draft a kid who's got a high ceiling, who's, you know, maybe a little bit raw or something like that, someone that who can be molded, mm-hmm. so to speak. So if I'm at 16, I don't want to just take best player available, because that can wind you up with a Doug McDermott with a low ceiling, or that can wind you up with, you know, a guy like Bobby Portis, where you wonder exactly what his ceiling is. So if you're going to go at 16, you're going to stay here for the next couple of years because this is what you want to do, then you're better off swinging and missing as opposed to just saying, you know what, we're just going to go take the safe guy or the guy who allegedly fell to us and we're so happy to have him. You know, Gar says that every year and I'm sick of hearing it. So I would have no problem with that. Donovan Mitchell intrigues me, but he's only 6'1". Like, he measured at 6'1" at the combine. 6'1".
Yeah. How do you shrink 2 inches?
Well, when you get officially get measured.
You measure with your shoes off.
You get measured with your shoes off. I think it's like 6'1¾" or something like that.
Wow.
Which turns into 6'3" when you put shoes on,
right.
Or 6'3" in the school's athletic guide to make you look a little bit better. Mm-hmm. He is athletic, but I wonder, is he too small to kind of have the type of, you know, real impact that this team needs him to have?
Yeah, Ricky, the thing Mitchell has, though, just to briefly say, is that he's got great length. He has a 6'10 wingspan. And in a sense, he reminds me a little bit of Avery Bradley. Now, Bradley's turned himself into a really good player this year for the Celtics. Obviously, we saw him give Jimmy Butler a super tough time towards the end of that first-round series. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Mitchell doesn't have, you know, all-star potential. And, you know, you could talk yourself into Ferguson having better physical tools. But I do think the combination of length and athleticism, that would be really good for the Bulls if they want to put the ball in Jimmy's hands and let him run the show a little bit. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like John Paxson wants to do that.
Ricky, last thing before we let you go. I'm going to put you on the spot. Something you kind of brought up earlier about we all assume Dwayne Wade, despite what Vincent said on the podcast a few weeks ago, we all assume Dwayne Wade is going to opt in and pick up his near $24 million player option. Gar's gone on the record in the end-of-year presser that he would like to have Nico back. So my question to you, Ricky, are we going to get Rondo, Wade, and Nico back on this roster next year?
Yeah, I mean, probably. And I think it's really just hypocritical because the front office is constantly talking about flexibility. But then they do something like give Dwayne Wade, you know, a two-year deal with a player option where he's making over $20 million, a contract no one else, I guess outside of the Denver Nuggets, was going to offer them. They did something similar with Pau Gasol. He only made about $7 million a year, I believe. So that was less of a burden on the cap. But it just seems like it's the same story every year. They want to tout future flexibility, but at the same time, they don't really have it because they keep giving out bad contracts to aging veterans who can't produce on both ends of the floor. I thought that Wade, at this point, you know, he's a terrific scorer, but I just don't know how much of a winning player he is. He wasn't even running back to the other end of the floor sometimes on defense. He's not someone who's going to get a loose ball. He's someone who's definitely going to control a lot of offensive possessions. So Wade's great. He's had a phenomenal career. If you want to talk about a historical perspective, I'll take Wade over Kobe even because I think he was a much more efficient scorer. But right now, I would personally like to see Wade off the team just so they could actually try to get younger and more athletic. However, Wade's not getting $24 million or whatever it is from anyone else. No, Dwayne Wade holds all the cards for the Bulls heading into this offseason. I expect him to pick up that option. And at that point, they're sort of stuck running it back, which to me would be totally uninspiring. And I don't think the fan base would be very happy with it because the team had to win on the last game of the season just to make the playoffs. They did go up 2-0 on the Celtics early in the playoffs before Rondo's injury, but it just wasn't a good team, and it was a joyless team. It wasn't a team that was fun to watch. I expect them to all be back next year, and I don't think the fan base will be very excited about it.
Another mediocre season. That is Cristiano Felicio's biggest fan, SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell. You can find him on Twitter, at SBNRicky. Ricky, thanks for your time, buddy.
Cool, thanks.
Catch a brand new episode of Beer Money, presented by Coors Light, Chicago's favorite sports trivia show, where fans are put to the test for a chance to take home cash. Every Sunday night at 7 on CSN.
Last week, we shot the CSN Combine, and now it's going to be a four-part series. It's going to start on May 31st on CSN. You can see Kendall and Vincent go head-to-head. Now, well, I want you, before the fans know exactly what they can see, because we'll have trailers and we'll get some video of it. It was supposed to be originally just a game of CSN, which is a game of horse, basically. Free throw contest, a three-point shooting contest. But the two of you ended up playing one-on-one. How in the world did that happen?
Well, you know those guys from Detroit, they always talk stuff. So I had to put Vincent in his place. He started talking about my Final Four loss to Michigan, about how Glenn Rice did something to me, how I see him in my sleep.
Do you see him in your sleep?
Absolutely not. You know, so I had to put him in his place, Bulldog. And, you know.
Did you really put me in my place?
Yeah, because you said you were bent over, you were breathing heavy when we were
photos. No, after the exact phrase was, I think I'm bleeding inside my chest.
Yeah, that's what he said. I think I'm bleeding inside my chest.
No, look.
That's exactly what he said.
I'm not going to deny anything that I said. Now, Kendall said I wouldn't score on him. And I won't say how many times I scored on him.
But it wasn't a shutout.
Oh, no. We didn't finish the game because we ran out of time because Kendall couldn't score on me as quickly and as efficiently as he thought he could have, including a couple of offensive fouls and travels and everything else. But that's fine. I'm not a professional athlete. I don't start actually going back because my schedule as a Bulls insider keeps me on airplanes and hotels as opposed to in the gym doing taekwondo and stuff like that, like Kendall.
Bulldog, the tape does not lie.
I'm not bragging about you.
You will see this man. You guys who are listening to the podcast, when it comes out, you will see this man fouling me repeatedly, going back to the old rules, hand-checking, which I don't mind because that's the era I played in. But fouled me repeatedly. There's no refs. I'm not going to call fouls because I just don't do that to guys like this. You know, I'm already operating at an advantage. So, you know, he fouled me repeatedly, and I still scored on him. Also, his one lone basket.
No, it was two. It was more than one.
Oh, yeah, you did. You did score on me going on underneath. I forgot that one. But the one that I gave him.
Who gives? Who gives in one-on-one?
He's a generous man, Kendall Dulles.
Okay, I backed up off of you 10 feet and dared you to shoot the jump shot, and you knocked it down. To your credit, you knocked it down.
Did you think this was going to be a pros versus Joes situation, the show you were on about 10 years ago?
No, I did not think so. I knew that I was going to have to meet him man for man talking smack because that's the one thing Vincent Goodwill is good at. He talks a lot of stuff, but the game, I didn't think that we were going to go into one-on-one.
No, that was kind of just impromptu because he had, after the game of CSN was over, he was like, he just had the ball at the three-point line, and he was like, why don't you come guard me? And at that point, if this was me walking into the gym, like after driving 5 hours or whatever, I just said, no, thank you. But at that point, I'm kind of in a lather a little bit. We just got finished playing, you know, three-point contest, horse, all that.
You were warmed up.
I was as warm as my 32-year-old bones were going to let me be at this stage. Now, if we did this in August after I'm working out for three, you know, this is what I do in the summer. I get back in shape and everything else before the season starts and I turn into, you know, blubber, you know. But if this was in August, it might be different. But I'll say this, I played much better in general than I thought because I hadn't picked up a ball in like 6 months.
It sounds like you want a rematch.
A what now?
A rematch. It sounds like you want a rematch.
Look, man, lies don't care who tell it.
Hey, look, I don't get rematches. It's one and done. You had your shot. You don't get another rematch.
Look.
You come at the king, you best not miss.
This ain't the king. It's the court jester.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
All right, let's move on. He's a man that is very controversial right now, and that's LeVar Ball. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about the shoes and the $500 pricing, and I don't want to talk about the marketing only for men. That's a separate conversation. But I want to ask you, Kendall, and Vincent, you certainly want your opinion too, is his parenting. He made the comment that he essentially willed his sons into basketball players. And I don't know LeVar Ball. I don't know what his parenting technique was. He certainly has three very athletic, talented sons at basketball. Mm-hmm. But as a father of two sons yourself, certainly with your Phoenix, who is very much in love with basketball and loves to play. How do you, as a parent, get that balance between being that Todd Maranovich type parent that just basically says, you're going to be working out 6 hours a day and I'm going to run you through these drills and you're going to do it till you puke or it's perfect. How do you find that extreme to the, well, just do what makes you happy? Because there is a balance there.
Yeah, I don't believe in the Todd Maranovich type upbringing. You know, I believe that you have to let your kids do what you want, what they want to do. You know, my son, Phoenix, is a basketball fanatic. I don't have to push him. You know, he just goes out and he does his thing. My other son, my youngest, Coda, wants nothing to do with basketball. And I'm perfectly fine with that. You know, I'm not going to be a LeVar Ball type and go out there and tell my sons, listen, you have to play, you have to go through all these drills, because, you know, that could have more effect on you psychologically and emotionally and socially than anything if it goes the wrong way. I mean, we look at how Tom Marinovich ended up. You know, I don't want my sons to be like
that. And there's a lot of athletes who got pushed into it from their fathers, mothers too, played it through high school and just completely burned out after that.
A perfect example is my dad did that to my brother, Keith, and my brother should be a pro. He probably should be in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame right now. That's how good he was.
But he's a better athlete than you were.
He's a better athlete than me, but my dad pushed him so much to be a baseball player that he burned him out and he quit. My brother didn't want anything to do with baseball, you know, in high school. And to this day, we all always talk about it, and he goes, you know, I should have really played. you know, but my dad was there driving him, so that's what happened.
You got to have a love for the game and a love for, I guess, the struggle of what it takes to improve and things like that. You got to love the work. Mm-hmm. You have to love the pure competition and the uncertainty of it. You know, because if you're falling under the weight of, you know, well, I have to do this or else, then it's no different than going to school every day. And if you give most kids a choice of whether they want to go to school every day or they want to chill out, they'll tell you, I'll chill out. You know, so you don't want it to become that way. And with LeVar Ball, you know, yeah, there's, I guess, exceptions to every rule. The Joe Jacksons of the world, you know, and you can see how those children are not necessarily the most well-adjusted, even though some of them became very successful.
Yeah.
There's a price to be paid. There's a price to be paid for that. You lose something, I think, when you go through that at a young age and you don't get a chance to develop other parts of your life through your adolescence and grow and mature naturally. And we're going to see with these kids, they're going to be under almost as big of a microscope as LeBron James was. Even though they're nowhere near as talented and gifted as he was, they're going to be under just as big of a microscope because LeVar Ball is taking so many shots at so many people that he's writing checks that his kids got to cash.
Right. That's the difference. You know, there are two big differences between when LeBron first came to the league and what's happening now, 2017. One is social media and the instant reaction. But at the same time, LeBron was hyped up because of how amazing he was, and he didn't have anybody talking game for him.
No, he
let his game talk.
Well, the bad part about this is that I have no problem with LeVar Ball being the new age Earl Woods. You know what I'm saying? Like, Earl Woods was saying a lot of these different things about Tiger Woods and Serena and Venus's dad were saying a lot of the same things, but he's not as, I won't say polished, because I don't think they're necessarily whereas, I guess, social media is sophisticated, so to speak, but there's a callousness and almost a mean-spiritedness to what he says. Like, talking about Kyrie Irving's mom, who died when he was young. That's completely out of line. Like, if you want to say LeBron James's kids have to go through different stuff, I didn't like that at all, because you don't have to knock anybody else down to prop your sons up. You know, okay, if that's inbounds or out of bounds, whatever, point for debate. But you don't talk about someone's dead parent. You especially when you know it's public knowledge that that person's parent was deceased at a young age and it had a profound effect on them. There's just some things that you just don't say.
It's a line you don't cross.
A line you look. Where I'm from Detroit. Them fighting words.
Yeah.
I don't care how big you is. Either I'm coming to the fight or I'm bringing somebody just as big to the fight with me.
Kendall, regarding the work, you're absolutely right, Vincent, in that regard. Regarding the work, and as a 15-year NBA vet, you know the work it takes, not only when you're at the middle school and high school level, but when you're in Illinois and once you get to the NBA to stay in the league after you get drafted. Mm-hmm. How important is it that any athlete, absolutely, you don't just to borrow from loving the practice, you know, with Iverson, you got to love the game and you got to love the practice too.
Yeah, you got to love the training, because really, that's really the only way you're going to stay in the league. Now, I don't know how good these other ball kids are. You know, I know that Lonzo's pretty good. You know, I watched him play this season, and I think that he's going to be a pretty good player. But their dad putting pressure on the other kids too. And I don't know whether they put the work in or not, how they're going to react to the next level. I know the next one coming up, I don't know what his name is, but he's going to UCLA. I don't think he's as talented as Lonzo. So it's going to be extra hard on him. You know, and you guys are going to be coming at him left and right. That's the thing that I don't think LeVar Ball sees. You just put a target on all of your kids' back. Right.
Especially the two younger kids.
And everybody that's a decent player is going to come at them. You know, and
well, I don't think that – I will say this. I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing in the world, because if you got to play against the best competition, you got to play well, whether it's an extra thing. But I think it places an undue amount of pressure on those kids where they can't develop – naturally and at their own pace because their father is writing checks that nobody is sure whether they can cash. And you see a lot of kids being ruined at young ages, be it, you know, circumstances, environment, whatever. Kids can be ruined by situations like this. He's going to walk to a locker room next year with grown men, not 19-year-olds, and his daddy will not be there to walk behind him. He's going to have to speak for himself, to fend for himself, to almost basically, if you look at it, back up his father's words, not just on the floor against the guys that you're against, but the guys that are on your team who have minutes, who got families to feed and don't care about what your daddy said.
Right. And certainly, though, if he goes to the Lakers, which many people expect him, you know, the Magic Johnson loves him. He's going to be a Laker. Unless the Celtics shock everyone and pass on Fultz. You know, Magic loves Lonzo, appears to love him. So, you know, he's probably going to go to L.A., and that, I think, will help him. He's went to UCLA from Chino Hills, so that should help him in that regard. That is our Bulls Talk podcast for Monday, May 22nd. Vincent Goodwill, Kendall Gill, Ricky O'Donnell. You can find our Bulls Talk podcast on csnchicago.com and on Apple Podcasts on iTunes. I'm Kevin Anderson. Everybody have a great week.